Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Thousand I know, welcome here.
Thank you.
I hope you're nervous.
Very.
Yes, good. I heard that there was a story in the news this morning about, was it the CEO of Volkswagen that said that something about becoming more efficient?
Yeah. So I was sitting
and then I'm thinking of you, becoming more efficient, then I think of you.
Yes, okay, good. Yeah, that's, you're referring to my talk yesterday.
Yeah.
And as you do read the news, and I saw that news about Herbert Diess, who is CEO of Volkswagen, telling all of the Volkswagen people, like his employees, that they should become more efficient, otherwise they will not be able.
So it was like a speech to the group,
I think,
like to
it was
the nation.
Written, yeah. I think it's like this came out of a discussion afterwards where the, I don't know, Betriebsrat, whatever that is called in English, where they complained to him saying like, you're just like scaring everybody with those kinds of statements. But I think it was a written statement to all employees.
On the internal Volkswagen Twitter wall.
like that, yes, exactly. Yeah. And it, I kind of wish that would have come out a day earlier, because I would have like immediately snippet that news into the presentation yesterday, because it's just perfect. Because I actually speak exactly to that case. I say like Tesla versus Volkswagen, and Tesla is focusing on like building the right products that people want. And then later in the second stage, like how can we do that efficiently? While Volkswagen argues like, let's just do it efficiently. And they're not even, they don't even consider Tesla really a competitor yet, because they don't realize that it's about building the right product first. So that was quite interesting news this morning for me to read.
But I guess all of the shareholders, they were happy about that. Yes, more, that means
more efficient.
Yeah,
because it means more money, more products,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
I would say that some people have been a bit miffed about Tesla not focusing on effectiveness, right? Because even though they made a wonderful product, they just couldn't get the cars out. People couldn't get the cars. So should they have focused more on that?
You mean efficiency then?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, okay.
Sorry, I got it wrong.
Yeah, but that's natural for
that's
a Dane,
a
because
yeah.
in Danish you can't differentiate between effectiveness and efficiency. It's the same word,
that
right?
That explains a lot about Danish products, really.
yes, it does.
And our efficiency.
Yes.
So I think Tesla did it, and the share market, to come back to that, I mean, currently anyway, proves that, right, that Tesla will choose the right strategy. I mean, Tesla is today, the market capitalization of Tesla is 8 times the market capitalization of Volkswagen, the third biggest automaker in the world after Toyota and now Tesla. Tesla is worth as much as the 50 next car makers combined, which is crazy. Like, don't get me started on whether that makes sense at all.
They'd never make sense.
It looks like the shareholders are pretty happy with
it makes sense for them
with the Tesla strategy. Yes.
But going back to that effectiveness, efficiency, the two words are so alike for somebody like me.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying when you're talking about it, but I get the words wrong all the time. Do you think that could be a problem for other people as well, that they just get the words wrong?
I absolutely think so. And I think a lot of people have that problem, exact problem. That's the same when I come, like in agility and in general, like just a word like product owner, people like have different assumptions on what does it actually mean? What does a scrum master mean? Some people hear team leader when you say scrum master, other people like interpret more into like somebody who's removing impediments or leader. So absolutely with effectiveness and efficiency, Which is also like when I talk to people about that, I first try to establish.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, effectiveness is about doing the right things, and efficiency is doing things right. But that's not enough. You still need to.
Define. But even that is a hard one too.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Yes, you need examples. You need to know what it's not. Also, you need to know what this is not what it is, right? In order to understand it.
Yeah, my favorite way of explaining it is really effectiveness. See?
There we go.
There you go.
Thank you.
Effectiveness is about looking outwards.
Yeah.
And like, what does the market want? Mm-hmm. It's like purely looking outwards, right? What do our users want? How do they use our product, etc., right? And it's a product thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Efficiency is process thinking. It's looking inwards. You don't care at all in efficiency thinking, like, what does the market want? You just look in. How can we improve our processes? How can you create more handovers and more specialization, or the opposite, depending on what system you're operating in, right? That's efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looking inward. So that, I think that's the easiest way to grasp the difference between effectiveness and efficiency.
Yeah.
And if you understand Scrum, I mean, you have those two roles, which beautifully are implementing that. The product owner, the effectiveness. The Scrum Master, the efficiency. Scrum Master and rest of the team, I should say.
Yeah.
Efficiency, right? I agree, that is a problem when people...
So could you say that mob programming is making people very efficient?
Who's
because they're taking away like all the waiting time?
So mob programming, that has to be defined to me a little bit more. So what I hear when I hear mob programming, and I need to ensure that I'm talking about the same thing, is like the next step after pair programming, but it's also including business people, and like everybody is in the room, and you have like super short communication paths. Is that correctly defined?
I understand it as well. Mm. Everybody in the same room working at the same thing on the same computer at the same time.
But also business, say users, not business.
Yeah.
Again, a confusing term, business.
Everybody who would be able to have some information that they need.
Yeah.
So they don't have to wait for the architect to answer whether they can do it like this or this. They don't have to wait for the data analyst to figure out what are the numbers here. They don't have to wait for the UX expert. Yeah, that's how I understand it.
So to me, that sounds like effectiveness and efficiency combined right there. Because if you have the users, like the stakeholders or mainly the users of that product that you're building.
The people you need answers from. Really.
Yes, exactly. Right. Effectiveness is talking to those pretty much. Usually that'll be around like, are we building the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to like, what do we need like a new expert to make this like really usable, then that would probably be more of efficiency. And you have like, that you have a cross-functional team there, and so I think that would actually cover both of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Maybe I'll introduce that into.
So my next question is, why is it so difficult to get people to try this out? So I tried it in a lot of different places that I've been an agile coach in, and it's only worked for me in two organizations, but they like it.
Yeah. Like the mob programming.
Yeah, the mob programming. They've made parts of the room where people can go mob program for a day or two when they want to. But it's so difficult to convince people about that. And I think if we could maybe make them understand that it's both efficiency and effectiveness, maybe that would be a good way of introducing it. Because right now they think it's just a complete waste of time because the developers are saying, we are the only ones who can sit by the keyboard. And if we're not at the keyboard all the time, then we're wasting time.
But a lot of developers think that way, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my experience. A lot of developers, like, I don't want to go to another meeting because if I'm not at my keyboard, I'm not producing any, I'm not productive.
Yeah.
And I always try to explain, no, I mean, this meeting, like, of course, there are some meetings that exactly are like that.
They are just bad a waste meetings. Of time. We shouldn't have those.
Yes, absolutely. No. We should just cancel those no matter what they're called or reduce them in time or anything.
Yeah.
Like, but there's like generally, like if it's a good meeting, then that meeting actually should make you more productive later, right?
Exactly.
Because you have more flow. You don't have to ask for the questions anymore that you already got clarified up front, etc. So why is always the question, right? Like why do organizations not want to do mob programming?
Mm-hmm. why don't they want to do agile?
Yeah, and I think it comes often down to, again, this, like, they want to be efficient.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Herbert Diess, like we talked about this, I mean, he says it to all of, what is it, 30,000 employees or whatever, or it's 100,000, I don't know how many people work for Volkswagen. I mean, he actually writes that in a statement or says it, whatever, like, you guys need to become more efficient. So it's not like they misunderstand, like,
he's putting it out right. If he has understood the word correctly.
Yeah, that is...
Yes.
Correct.
That's
maybe he meant effectiveness, but I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so either. I was just trying to make a sick joke.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that it's the same for if you're talking about agile to everybody, like developers, organizations. A lot of them are saying, oh, it's a waste of time. We don't want to do all that talking. We don't want to have all these meetings. And they don't understand that having these meetings, having that conversation, not the meetings, the conversation means that you can save a lot of time because you become more efficient.
Yes.
I was using it correctly now.
Yes.
And the same with retrospectives that I'm talking about tomorrow. A lot of people think that they're a waste of time, and they definitely can be a waste of time if they're not done right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that, I guess, it's about doing things for a purpose.
Yes, exactly. Asking the right question, why are we doing this? What do we expect to get out of this? Because if we don't really expect to get anything out of it, if it's just something that we need to tick off to call ourselves agile, then it can become a terrible waste of time. I'm sure you see that in a lot of organizations that you work with as well. They call for you when they have problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like with me, we only see the bad cases because otherwise they would never call us. And people hate it and people dislike it and they... So you see that a lot too, I suspect.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm one client is almost the other way around.
So they, too eager.
Yeah, it is interesting. So I got there. They asked me to come and help them become agile, which of course, like many places, means like, let's help us do Scrum.
Yeah.
And I was there for, I don't know, 2 weeks or so, not full time, but like about half time. And I told them, guys, you are pretty agile already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have lots of small applications and they deliver them. So this first day I get there, they say like, oh, we got this big new product or project in, and I said, okay, so big, like how big? And he goes, like 3 weeks. Exactly. 3 weeks. And I go, okay, when I hear big, I think like 9+ months.
Yeah.
Right? It's like 3 weeks. Okay, so that's a big project.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Good start.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it turns out like they have lots of small requests and I deliver them like right into production. Through some phases, of course, testing and stuff, but like quickly into production and no dependencies to other teams, etc. It's like, I just came back. It's like, guys, you are pretty agile. Okay, you're not doing Scrum. Like, they don't have a Scrum Master. Uh-huh. They don't have a product owner. They don't have a backlog. Prioritization is actually not that important because they almost, like, capacity is almost matching the appetite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in which order you do it, of course, still has an impact on how much value you create.
But not as
and
much
when.
Because everything gets done.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything gets done. It's like that's where this three-week project.
What could you tell them then?
So there was a, well, our like the CEO, etc., like the C-suite, they want us to be agile, and for them it's still
that's
like
a problem because that means it's well, first of all, that's a discussion about managers and leaders, and second, this is an order from above.
Mm-hmm.
So now from tomorrow we are agile.
Which can actually make them less agile than they were.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's also what I told them. Like, guys, we need to be careful with this. Yeah. Like, we're not going to tell every... They also have split these 15 people into four tiny teams. Like, usually it's like 9, 10, 11, mm-hmm. 12 people.
Yeah.
But these are like three, four people teams, right? So it's like, everything is like, we need to be careful with this. Like, let's ask these individuals who wants actually to try a little bit more structure, like Scrum, for instance.
Yeah.
And we identified one team, and that's the team I'm starting with now. And we're looking at, like, how do we do that now? So that was quite interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's actually a new experience.
Yeah, I have almost the opposite experience from one organization, which was... It was a smallish company, and they were doing really well, making extremely good products. And I talked to the CTO, and he was ridiculing everything to do with Agile. He thought it was just stupid, a waste of time, everything was bad. And I said to him, yes, okay, but you have morning meetings every morning where you're sort of looking at where you are. If you hear some changes from your customers, you are changing the product direction. You are at regular intervals thinking about how well you're doing and how you can do better. How are you not agile? Right. So they were also very agile. He just hated agile because he didn't like the frameworks that he saw was the agile. So that's interesting.
I guess that's why agile has become a negative word in many contexts.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because there are too many opinions about doing it right.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a religion and a set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually what it should not be. It should be common sense.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like people treat it as a recipe for some cookie they don't like. And it's not, like Scrum is not supposed to be a recipe, and Agile is in general is not supposed to be. There are some frameworks out there that I would sign our recipes, or are even trying to sell themselves as a recipe, but...
Well, that's more like a toolbox, and you can pick what you need.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In order to support you.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with Scrum. In essence, I think it's a very good tool to use to start off with doing Agile with a loose framework like that. The problem, as you mentioned, with those frameworks is that if you implement them, you forget to think. You forget to think about whether this is a right way or not.
That's
and then your
on.
Process is not Agile.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. And people give what is lacking is understanding. It's like, why do we have a daily? Why do we retrospective? Why do we have a review? The process, which is even wrong to begin with, the process says we should do a review.
Yeah.
And then you get questions like, are we allowed to do this and that? Like, is the product owner supposed to be in the retrospective? Well, I guess that depends, right?
Depends on the situation.
Exactly. Yes. And if you understand what the retrospective is for, you can answer that question yourself. You don't have to go to a coach or consultant. It's like, can the product owner be in the retrospective?
On the other hand, if they have to go to a coach or consultant, then I can make my living.
I was just about to say that you're on thin ice now.
But you can live off your book now.
Yes, I can. That's how
you don't need to.
No, I don't have to work
and
anymore.
And you can double your rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as an author with a best-selling book.
Yeah.
I read on LinkedIn, what is it, somebody was saying, like, it's not even possible to get the book anymore, right?
It's kind of difficult. But
That must be pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see some downstairs, though.
Yeah, I just bought some.
Buy them.
I just bought some.
Yeah, I thought, like, should I buy the whole bunch of 20 and then sell them at a premium?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I saw set up my own website. He bought the whole bunch of the old design patterns book.
He has
them piled up.
Yeah.
And I was thinking.
The Gang of Four book.
Yes, exactly. Does he expect to sell them here?
Well, do they 100 kroners for two of them.
What? That's cheap.
75 for one, 100 for two.
I need to go buy a bunch as well.
Yeah.
That is...
I spent 4 years of my life working on that book. I mean, not writing it, but working on it.
Yeah. So I remember when my career started as a software developer there, that
was the Bible.
Eric Gammer was, I think, living in Zurich at that time.
Yes, sounds plausible.
Yeah, and Kent Beck was also there, although he's not in the Book of Four, he's not part of that.
But he probably has an opinion about it.
Oh, yeah. I think.
What do you like people that have
I think
opinions?
His ideas were the origins for the design pattern book.
What is that?
I think Kent Beck's ideas about the patterns in Smalltalk was the origin for the book.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
But I walked to the big stand of books there, and I saw that book. It's like, and you know, you get these flashbacks almost.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, does that book still exist? I mean, of course it exists, but like, is somebody actually selling it?
Yeah.
And only now when we talk, it's like, gee, 100 kroners for.
I remember how expensive it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was back then.
Yes.
How long ago was that? 25 years?
Yeah, pretty much. That's when I moved to Switzerland and started a program.
With your book,
yes. The book under the arm.
Well, I think I had the red books from university,
where
we know each other from. Hey, that was a good time. Yeah.
That was a good time.
But back to your book.
Yes.
So how come it's so hard to get a hold of already?
No, it always has been. Trouble is, I used an American publisher and they publish books in America and then they sell them in America. And then they hadn't shipped any books to Europe.
So, but your network is to 80% in Europe.
95, I think.
Okay, yeah.
So they're just trying to get them to Europe. And it's working now. And now we're going to print them again, but this time in Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, makes more sense.
Yeah.
So that's why it's difficult. I would love to say that it's because it's sold out.
It's not.
No, it's not. But it will be, of course.
It will be.
And then
will
we'll
be.
Print another set.
It didn't have a chance to.
Well, actually, the people who had bought it when you could buy it at Amazon, 3 months after they got their order cancelled and their money back on their card because they couldn't get the books to Europe.
Wow. Okay.
That's a bad start selling a book, I'd say. Yeah.
Well, but you learn from it for your next book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had been writing my book for about 6 years, and then I took 2019 off to finish my book. And then 2020, COVID came. So that was a bad judgment.
Good timing.
I shouldn't.
Unlucky, I wouldn't say bad. Bad sounds like you could have done it because
I was really unlucky. Yeah, I should have written my book in 2020 instead of, because I had loads of time in 2020.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Same here, yeah.
Yeah.
For 1.5 years, all I've been doing is giving a few courses here and there. But now it's really picking up again.
Yeah, which is nice.
So on retrospectives, so a pattern I see in retrospectives is that teams, or actually everybody, is always pointing outwards. I was working with this Danish organization at the beginning of this year or in spring, and whoever I spoke to, they were like, "Oh yeah, we should really become. You should change this guy. Mm. You should change this girl. Mm. You should change this manager. You should change this group." And when you spoke to any of those, they would point in all the other directions. And it's a pattern I see in so many retrospectives. And it's probably okay once in a while to cry a little bit and point outwards, and there is certainly other things that need to change as well, but people are generally very bad at looking in the mirror and saying, what should I change?
Yeah, it's different from team to team, I would say. So that's actually in the book as the anti-pattern in the soup.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Because sometimes I have a team that's like that, and every time we gather data, we look at the things that they're complaining about. It's always somebody else they're complaining about. And then what I do is that I made that circles of influence activity, the soup activity, where I draw a circle and I say, these are the things you can do, these are the things you can influence, and outside are the things that's in the soup. You just have to accept that. You have to learn to live with that. And then let's take all the post-it notes that you complained about and let's put them into these circles. And then they do that, and then sometimes they see that all the post-it notes are in the soup. And then I make them take a step back, as you say, reflect on it, look at it and say, what do you see here? Yeah. And then it's so much more efficient, effective, whatever, if they realize themselves what's happening. So if I can make them realize themselves, oh, right, so everything we're complaining about is out of our circle of influence, something that we cannot do anything about, then it just becomes what Daniel North calls a regretrospective, where we're just saying, oh, this is so bad, we're just complaining. And as you said, it's good to let some air out from time to time and complain about things. But if you're continuously complaining about things you can't change, then the retrospective becomes a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because then you're just talking about something that you can't change. And that thing about making them focus, taking responsibility, it's a big part of Agile.
Yeah.
So it's a big learning device, I think, for Agile in general, for a team to take responsibility and to say, okay, so some of these things that we can't do anything about, maybe there's something we can do something about. Maybe we can take part of the problem and move it into the circle of influence, and then perhaps we can change a little bit from our own side, or we can just learn to accept it and move on instead of complaining. So that's definitely a pattern I see myself. And it's so interesting to see when they get it, when they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. We're not taking responsibility for anything. I use this in my own life as well, in the soup with myself and my children.
Okay.
When we're complaining about things.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you've got all these things to complain about. Oh, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Then I make the in the soup activity with myself or with my children and say, okay, well, these things we just have to learn to live with, just have to accept it.
Hmm.
And this you can do something about.
Like parents' rules, for example. You just have to accept them.
In the soup.
Yes, exactly. Right.
We
yes.
set the rules.
Yeah, you have just to. Live by them. And the yes. adaptation can be that you can move away from home when you are old enough if you don't like.
Yeah.
You could move away soup. Now, but
yeah.
probably yes. can't support
move
yourself
out
yet.
Into the soup.
yeah, move out. 17, 19, and 26.
So they could all move out.
They could actually almost all move out, but I don't want them to.
Yeah, mine are 14, so that's probably pushing it
yeah,
a
it
little
would
bit
be.
To kick him out
they
already.
They probably yeah. could make a living, but then they wouldn't get an education.
Yeah, but you know, like, you know, I live in Switzerland, right? And the further south you get, the later the kids move out.
Yeah,
you know,
like
in Italy,
Italy,
they don't
yeah.
move out until they're 35 or yeah, 40 or something like that.
True.
So Switzerland's not that bad, but it's certainly later.
When did you
Denmark,
move out?
When I moved to Aarhus to study, so that was when I was 19, I guess, yeah.
Mm.
Must have been. So that was, like, for Danish standards, not that early.
No, it's actually pretty late.
Yeah. And for an Italian, that's almost a baby still, right?
Yes.
yeah.
I think it's effectiveness in that context, by the way.
Thank
because
you.
I can be super efficient in yeah, trying to solve yeah. something that's...
Yeah, but nothing comes out of it, so yeah, it's the effectiveness that goes down. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Stephen Covey, like this, the author of the highly Seven Habits of mm. Highly Effective People, once said, like, it's like if the ladder leans against the wrong wall, every mm. step you take just gets you
in the wrong direction
to the wrong place faster.
Definitely,
which
yeah.
doesn't really help, right? Or no. something along those lines.
That's
it wasn't
true.
Like a super exact quote.
Yeah.
Another question on retrospectives I actually have had is, so we are there, if we are like facilitators, coaches, mm-hmm. maybe not consultants, that's different than if it's consultant, you tell them like you do yeah. this more or less. Like, but if we are more like there as a facilitator and a coach and they have like all these stickies and they like maybe that's the trick already, like not just dot voting, like which one should we now look mm. at, mm. right? And they pick one where you go like, that's not really a problem. I mean, that's... Okay, we don't have plants in our room. Like, it wouldn't make it a nicer area. Just take a stupid example. Like, and then they talk for about that for a half an hour. And like, where could we get plants? Okay, this is a really bad example
yeah,
to exaggerate,
yeah.
but only.
But, no, but I know what you mean.
And you think like, but that sticky down there, like this
yeah.
one, like the conflict you have with your product owner not trusting you or something like that. That's the one you should be discussing. Like how. Without like stepping out of the facilitator
yeah.
role and becoming a consultant, how do you get them to address? And maybe we're wrong, of course. Maybe that is the most important one they are discussing. I don't know. But how do you get out of that?
There are many answers to that. And
I want a recipe.
Yeah. I'll give you a recipe. It depends, really. So I would say that if you're doing idealistic retrospective facilitation, then you just say, well, this is what they have energy to discuss today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they know that there is a problem down there, but you should follow the energy, and that's what they've got the energy to discuss. And just leave them to do that and think, okay, so maybe today is just about sharing and about communicating and maybe not about solving the most important problem. But there will be a retrospective again in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That would be one thing to do. Another thing to do could be that you say, okay, great, so we talked about this, but we have other things that we could talk about. Should we just put this on the parking lot folder, and then we can talk about it afterwards if we need to talk about it anymore? Because we also need to look at the other things and sort of shutting that down in a polite way and saying, let's look at the other things. What is the next most interesting thing that you'd like to talk about? So that's another way you can do it. But I think it would depend on whether you believe that they need to have that discussion because that's the only thing they've got energy for, or whether it could also be that you are working with a team where they are not so fond of retrospectives because they think they're a waste of time, and then you definitely have to do something about not making it a waste of time. So I sometimes come into teams where they think it's a terrible waste of time because it has been a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, I have to make sure that they get something concrete out of it. And in those cases, I am a bit more harsh in my facilitation and less invisible, and I'm making sure that we're talking about things where we can get an action point or an experiment that can actually help them improve the way that they're working together. But it sort of depends on what the team is like. It could also be that it's a team that I know very well, and I actually say, okay, now I step out of the facilitator role.
Yeah.
And I think that you need to focus on this because this is something I hear about all the time. So that would be in cases where I'm working as a Scrum Master or an Agile coach close to the team, and I know that it's okay for me to step out of the facilitator role and to say these things. Yep. But I think that should be the last resort.
Yep.
Because I really do believe that the retrospective should be about what they need to talk about right now, what they have the energy for. And then some people are saying, well, then they're not talking about the important things, they're not solving the right things. And I say, yes, okay, but they might do it at the next retrospective, or then you can add some Toyota Kata on top of that if you want, if there are some things that you specifically want to change. Mm-hmm. But you just have to respect that the retrospective is something for the team where they're talking about what they need to talk about at the moment. Did that sort of, it wasn't a recipe, it was like three recipes.
No, but that was Danish sarcasm, right? So, yep. I just feel that I often see the situation where they're discussing something like,
yeah.
But the topic, like for instance, like what can you do, or yeah, like some really important topics that like again and again and again don't make it to the one that's being discussed in this retrospective.
If it's recurring, then as I say, you can be a more harsh facilitator. Yep. You can step out of the role, or maybe when you have a retrospective over the retrospective, which I have sometimes when I have time, sometimes it's just like, this, was it worth your time? Sometimes yep. I actually do have a retrospective where I ask them what worked for you, what didn't work for you. And then you can say, well, as a facilitator, what I saw happening here was that you were spending a lot of time discussing this. Was this because you really wanted to discuss this, or was this because you were afraid of discussing the other thing, or you didn't notice it, or just...
Yep.
Again, asking the why.
Let's keep it here.
I had lots of more questions.
I know.
He could tell I was just about to ask them.
Yeah, don't get him started.
Well, thank you. That was a great question.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.